because all of you jumped to the front, you know, this morning, I think I can stay down here because there's not much in the way. It's awesome. So, I'm sitting at the airport, waiting for a flight to come home after an amazing vacation to where? Hold on. Manitoba. And Northern Ontario. Yes, we live in BC, and we vacation in Manitoba and Ontario. Why, you ask? Well, you can check out the simple thing. Pictures say thousands of words, so you can check out my Facebook site, and you can see actually what we did and what was happening and how we like to party. And it was awesome. It was unbelievable. So I'm sitting in the airport waiting to come back home. And Sharon has taken the kids to spend their... it was going to be $1 that Amma gave them, but then their grandma said, you're going to the airport. What can you buy at the airport for $1? We're like, I don't know if you can buy anything for $1. So gives them $2 or $3 to go spend their Amma money at a store. And I found some quiet, and I'm sitting, and I'm looking, and I start people watching. Anyone like people watching? Yeah, so I'm people watching. And... as I start people watching, I start looking, and I see a mom that can't really parent her child that well. Obviously, in the 30 seconds that I saw her, though. So things start going through my mind. And then I see a husband and wife and, like, a family arguing where they should go, whether it's Starbucks or Tim Hortons for their snack. And it was quite an argument. So you could tell one of them was from Ontario, one of them must have been from BC. And so that was interesting. And then I see this quite large man that has fallen asleep listening to his iPod and really needs his shirt to be pulled down because he's catching flies with his navel. And literally, it's... And I'm thinking I could probably pull his pants down. Like, and so I find myself, I'm people watching, but in the midst of people watching, and we're seeing all of the beauty that is among us in our people, I was amazed how quickly my humanity, the darkness of my humanity, because sometimes humanity is actually really good, but the darkness of my humanity set in, and how quickly I was able to start judging these people, judging the mom that couldn't handle a couple kids that she had, judging this guy who's sleeping and probably missing his flight and probably doesn't work very much, or does he, or what does he do, or he doesn't care about what he looks like. I'm starting to judge these people. I'm looking at the family that's arguing about Tim Hortons or Starbucks. I'm saying, who cares? Like, just go somewhere and don't argue in front of me. And I find myself, and there was others, like, and I just... And I had to rein it in, actually. And I was like, whoa. I just had this great vacation with some... maybe it's because I was... Well, it was good. Amazing vacation with family. Maybe that's why I started judging lots. But all of a sudden I realized, I'm quick to judge. And these are people that I don't even know. These are people that haven't even offended me in any way. These are people that haven't said something like harsh to me or done something stupid to me that I'm already judging. And I was like, oh, very interesting. What is that about me? What is going inside of me? What is going on inside of me in this way? So as I start looking, I start judging. And in fact, it's like I'm playing God. We love putting ourselves above others and judging others in all different kinds of ways, don't we? There's something in our spirit that wants, that's good, that wants us to know how loved we are, wants us to know how beautiful we are, wants us to know how valued we are, that can turn and quickly shift. And our value and our love and who we are sometimes is determined by other people, and especially if we can judge them, because then sometimes, somehow, I'm a little bit better than them. And it's interesting. I don't know if that happens to you ever, probably never, eh? I found myself just sitting in the airport. And this is the same thing that happened over 2,000 years ago. And James is writing to the New Testament church here about this sort of thing and warning them about this trend and how this has no place in God's kingdom. So let's read our text, verses 11 and 12. And I have two verses. Like, remember, I've had like up to 30 verses sometimes. Like, this is wonderful. If you're thinking you're going to get out of here early, you're right. Let's hope for that. So, James 4, 11 and 12. Don't speak evil against each other, dear brothers and sisters. If you criticize and judge each other, then you're criticizing and judging God's law. But your job is to obey the law, not to judge whether it applies to you. I like how they translate that. God alone, who gave the law, is the judge. He alone has the power to save or to destroy. So what right do you have to judge your neighbor? That's it. Why is James saying this? What's the deal? Is he saying this because of the fact, that we as Christians need to be living and doing and loving life differently? In James's letter, there are many different warnings that have happened that we've looked at of how to live well with other people. In particular, how the rich should live with the poor, how other people from different social, ethnic, political, and economic backgrounds and realities need to view each other in order to be family together. We're called to be they call each other's brothers and sisters to be family together. As Jesus followers, there is an understanding that we are all equal, that we share in the same humanity, and we all need grace, love, generosity of Jesus in order to be saved. But we also have this special mark of the Imago Dei, the image of God planted in us. And as I look around, I see you who are beautiful, who have the image of God planted on them. So what is this passage getting at? Is it about speaking? Or would it and might it be something more? Sometimes we think, or even propagate, that Christians need to speak well and language needs to be sanitized. So, because when we do that, and I don't know about you, but growing up in the church, there was this tendency for me to speak one way around a certain group of friends and another way with a different group of friends. And so in doing that, I knew that if I was around my family or my church friends, that I needed to act a certain way to be able to make it look good, make Christianity look good. And we are God's ambassadors for living well, but sometimes we get this in, as Christians, it can quickly turn from living the good life, which is accepting and living in the gospel of Jesus, the good news that he has given us, the grace and mercy that he's given us, that can quickly turn to I'm better than them, or I'm better than her, or we're better than them. And if you nuance it even further, it almost seems that sometimes we can be squeaky clean, look good Christians, and then there's a wedge between other people and races and other people that don't look like us. So it easily gets to the point that we believe that ourselves, that we're looking pretty clean, good and shiny and godly. And our judgments and our finger pointing, my mother told me never to do that. I always usually do this, I don't know if you know this, but I'm doing this to make a point. But our judging and our finger pointing can end up kind of going, oh, thank God I'm not like that. I'm not like this, right? And we can do that. In fact, at the time of this letter, there was a traditional male, Jewish male, many of them, not all, but many of them would wake up in the morning, and one of the first prayers would be what? Anyone know? Thank God I'm not a woman. Or, thank God I'm not a Gentile. Or, thank God I'm not a slave. Some would go so far to say, thank God I'm not a woman, a Gentile, slave, or dog. And in that way, there was this sense of, I'm just a little bit better than them. And so, I want to pose to you today that in judging others, which here they say speaking evil, another word NIV says slander, so speaking, judging evil against people in this way can very quickly set ourselves above others. And this is what James is actually trying to get at. Not necessarily your speech. He's going for the heart. Because he knows that's the wellspring of life. So, we're like, whoa. In fact, this whole book is about how does family live together well? Does everyone have an equal say around the table? Do we hear each other? What does it look like? And so during this time, it's interesting that, and James is the brother of Jesus. And Jesus has some interesting words that sound quite like the same words that James is saying here in Matthew. Matthew 7, 1, verses 1 to 5. I think we have those verses. Do not judge others, and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. And why worry about the speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? That speck in your... How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye, when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite. First get rid of the log in your own eye. Then you will be able to see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. So Jesus is actually trying to be funny here. So this is not a log in any imagination because I can lift it. but he was trying to get us to see a point, and he was actually trying to be funny about it. He goes, can't you see? Like, it's like me coming up. I'm like, hey, I'm walking up over here, and I come up to Ron. I go, oh, Ron, how's it going? You look really great. Oh, can I help you with something? You got some sawdust in your eye, dude. And so what's Ron thinking right now? Yes, that's what I was hoping. You're making a spectacle of yourself. And so you're kind of looking and going, what? Like, what are you doing? And my mom had a great saying. My mom, man, she was amazing. And she would say this saying to us kids. She'd kind of take Bible verses and kind of twist them around, and not in a bad way. And although maybe sometimes she did. And so, I love you. But one of the ways she would do it, she said this phrase, and it was quite interesting, and I've used it quite often. And sometimes I was wondering, can I say that on Sunday morning? Sure. And so she basically says, don't pick anybody else's nose until your own nose is clean. And then she would say, who really wants to be the booger police anyway? Really? Can anybody's nose really be clean? Kind of? Maybe? Maybe not? Like, And so Jesus is saying, hey, you got stuff in your own eye. You're a carpenter. You're working on your stuff. And you've got like sawdust. You've got a log. You've got stuff in your own eye. And you're pointing out the stuff in your brother's eye. What are you doing? Just like the same thing my mom says. Your nose is full. Why are you telling your sister that she's got something dripping out of hers when yours is just like all over the place? That's what my mom was saying. And it's true. So why is James, and now Jesus, saying these words about judging to the disciples, Jesus, and now to the new Christians for James? I think it's because they know how easily and how quickly we like to think that ourselves are above others. And I think this is the biggest point here. And that gets fleshed out in our speech. It gets fleshed out in our actions toward people, especially people that have offended us, let alone people that I don't know sitting in the airport. Especially people that don't look like us. Especially people that seem like they don't have their act together. especially people who seem like they're a drain on society. Especially people who, fill in the blank. You get the point. The point about judging is that it cuts and it divides. And it separates. The Greek word krino, divide, to condemn, this judging word that they're using here, it puts the one who's judging over top of the other. But James, as well as Jesus, is saying, no. No. We're on the same level here. We're all in the same playing field. We all have been stamped with the Imago Dei. We all have the same humanity. We all are beautiful in God's sight. And what does that look like? So we, as Christians, as Jesus followers, are to live so differently that it would look other. It would look strange. It would look different. It would look maybe alien to the social context of the time. It would look like the kingdom that Jesus was praying in Matthew 5 would be established. Jesus' followers are not bound by the rules of society. We are bound by the grace and the love of Jesus to live differently. That's what's binding us. To love and live differently. Both these passages are referring to what's called, and James talks about, the royal law. So let's look at that. To love your neighbor as yourself. It's found in Leviticus 19:18. It says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against your fellow Israelite, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. In fact, James is actually repeating himself. So if you read James, you go, oh, James, stop it. Like, he does. He repeats himself. But it's like, you know, sometimes Sharon so lovingly repeats things to me. And she writes things down on a list. And I don't do them. I make up my own list and say, see here, done. She goes, how about this one? But I forget, right? And we forget these things. And so James is here in chapter 2, verses 8 to 13. He says this. Yes, indeed, it is good when you obey the royal law as found in the scriptures. Love your neighbor as yourself. But if you favor some people over others, you are committing a sin. You're guilty of breaking the law. For the person who keeps all the laws except one is as guilty as the person who has broken all of God's laws. For the same God who said, you must not commit adultery, also said, you must not murder. So if you murder someone but don't commit adultery, you've still broken the law. So whatever you say or whatever you do, remember that you will be judged by the law that sets you free. There will be no mercy for those who have not shown mercy to others. But if you have shown mercy, God will be merciful when he judges you. Mercy triumphs over judgment. NIV says that. And then Matthew records Jesus teaching about the kingdom of God, and the Pharisees and the Sadducees are trying to trip him up, and he's telling people what the kingdom looks like. He's basically saying, well, like, it's talking, you need to deny yourself. It's not about you. And then it comes together in Matthew 22, verses 34 to 40. It says this, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of the experts of the law tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like this, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. The Pharisees might be thinking Jesus is going to go, which of the Ten Commandments, right? Which of the Ten Commandments is the biggest? Jesus goes, no. You don't understand. Everything hangs on this. Those laws are in place because of this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And they couldn't say anything about that. Because the law was in place because of God's love. It's God's love for mankind, how we learn to live with one another, work with one another. How do we live as a community? This is what it is. Now God's law is actually giving us the law. God's love is giving us the law. So Jesus basically says, all right, it hangs on this. Everything. So they're like, all right, can't do anything now. And they get angry and mad. And then, what happens? Jesus defines neighbor. How does Jesus define neighbor? This is where it gets tricky, people. How does Jesus define neighbor? One of the ways he does it is the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? Where this guy has been basically thrown out, and then the enemy, the enemy, the one that's taking care of the person. And Jesus talks about enemy and talks about what are we supposed to do with our enemies? Oh, supposed to do the same thing with our enemies than we do with our neighbors. Love them. Oh. Ooh. Comes down to love. Yeah, ooh. And so this idea of setting ourselves up above people, it can happen very quickly in conversations. It can happen very quickly in our own minds. It can happen even more quickly when we've been offended by someone. Now, I must admit that I was having a hard time trying to understand. Okay, so Jesus is talking about don't judge people. James is saying don't judge people. And you're like, okay, but what about, like, don't you just have to judge people sometimes? Like, there's some heinous things that happen, right? So what do we do with that? And then in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians 5, 12, and 13, in John, in 1 John, basically, 1 John talks about judging the Spirit, so we're supposed to judge. And then Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 5, talks about, okay, we got to judge someone that's totally, like, causing anarchy. We have to figure this out. And so there is kind of going, hey, this is wrong, right? There is this thing that we're... So what do we do with that, though? It's interesting. Then led me to Deuteronomy 1, 17, where they're talking about the fact that God is judge alone. But then they're like, they had to figure out all these problems that they have. And God says, okay, so this is what you're going to do. And this is recorded. It says, do not show partiality in judging. Hear both the small and great alike. Do not be afraid of anyone, for judgment belongs to God. Bring me any case too hard for you, and I will hear it. And so there's this times where actually God's given people, leaders, the opportunity to judge what's happening. But I wonder if this is where you're innocent before you're proven guilty. And that's a good thing because we need to hear everything, the whole host of what's happening. And there needs to be a group of leaders and people that would discern that as well. But the end result, the judging alone comes from God alone. So it's like judging is this... We can't just be flippantly judging people, especially with our mouths. So I think what James and Jesus is speaking about is the quick, flippant, judgmental slander, the speech that doesn't give proper voice to the whole situation. And we often judge inappropriately then. And we use slander, misinformation, ulterior motives to seek what appears to be in our own eyes the good. And I think we're doing more than sinning against our neighbor then. We're actually breaking the royal law. We're breaking our trust in who God is. And in fact, James and Jesus alike both say that we're judging ourselves. I don't know about you, but I sometimes think I'd be a good judge of myself. What kind of who do you want judging you? That's the question. What does that look like? So judging in the scriptures is not to be taken lightly at all. It's God's deal. He's put some parameters in place for leaders to judge and to come up with a clear what's going on. But there's this aspect that it can't just be something like, oh, this person. We love lumping people together, or a broad brush stroke, or we're not hearing everything. And slander is basically, it's like it's killing that person. And I bet you if I ask, like, anyone ever been slandered against? Yeah, like, you know, all the way from kindergarten to now. But we're so quick to do that. So judging, it's God's alone. But who is this judge? Who is this judge? Who is this God that judges us? Scriptures undeniably say that God is love. In Colossians 1:19-21, it talks about God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in Jesus. So if you want to look to who God is, you look to Jesus. The fullness of God is in the person of Jesus. So we interpret actually scriptures through who Jesus is. Right? That's the stop all. It's Jesus. Love is found in the person of Jesus. So if Jesus is God, what does playing God look like? How does Jesus play God? I'm going to have you watch a video, and then I'm going to say a couple more things. This is researcher and author Brené Brown. Some of you guys know who she is. It's on a website, a fabulous website called The Work of the People. But if you want to cue that up, and we'll listen to this 3-minute clip by Brené.
Jesus makes complete sense to me.
Why?
Because this is my whole thing. I believe God is love. It's that simple and that complicated. And so if you tried to express love to human beings and just came down and said, I am love, love each other. We automatically, because we're so afraid of hard things, we would automatically go to like unicorns and rainbows. And so you would have to send someone to show what love in the flesh looks like. You would have to send, what does love look like? And so otherwise we would romanticize it. We would make it easy, because that's who we are as people. We're going to make it easy. And so then Jesus comes and says, okay, I am love. I sit with the people you're not allowed to talk to. I do all the hard things. I make all the hard choices. I love the people that are unlovable. I feed the people who are not supposed to be taken care of. I don't tolerate shame. I don't tolerate attacks. Like, I'm love, and it's hard and messy and dirty. And if you really love, I mean fierce, big love, you'll become dangerous to people. And so there's no way that most of us could have understood what love was without seeing what love looked like. So to me, it makes perfect sense. And so God is love, and Jesus is what love looks like made flesh. And it's hard, and it's not the default, and it has nothing to do with rainbows and unicorns and fluffy stuffed animals. It's about choosing what's right over what's easy. We don't want love to be that.
It's a great question. What does your love look like? Well, let's look at the judge's love. The one who can actually judge and will. First Peter says that Jesus is going to come back and judge the living and the dead. Let's just look at what his love looks like in Philippians 2:1-11. Is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Any comfort from his love? Any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and compassion? Then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another, and working together with one mind and purpose. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others better than yourselves. Don't look only to the interests of your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, he did not think equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave. He was born as a human being. When he appeared in the human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Therefore, God elevated him to the place of highest honor and gave him the name above all other names, that the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and earth, and every tongue declare that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. This is how Jesus plays God. What are we doing? Can I encourage us to not play God poorly? Can I encourage us not to play God? Can we encourage each other and ask the question, what does my love look like? This love that Jesus is showing in his life, death, and resurrection, it's not power hungry, it's not greedy, it's not vindictive. This is love. This is Jesus. This is our judge. How can we live the way that Christ has lived in us? How can we this week discover who Jesus is? And in that aha moment of discovering who Jesus is, maybe today, maybe this morning, as I was prepping this sermon, I was like, Jesus is the judge. That's who I want to judge me. One who's full of grace and mercy, who's going to have to make some hard decisions at some point. But that's his problem, not mine. How can we, in our actions, in the midst of discovering who Jesus is today, his love for us, how are we able to follow Jesus this week? How is that discovering who Jesus is changing our actions? Because some of us, I know for me, I admit it, I'm totally judging this week. How can I follow Jesus? And in my following, this is the kicker, and in my following who Jesus is, who God has given love to me, he uses me to dispense love and grace to other people. He uses us as a church to actually reveal his kingdom come here on earth. There's purpose in our life, people. This is a full onslaught of who God is as we accept and we understand and we discover who Jesus is. That will change our slander into life-giving conversations with people. It will change our judging into loving. I want to encourage us to do that. Not that we want to go longer at all, but I was thinking, yeah, summertime, you know, it's, look at that. Hey, I almost need a clap for that one, but don't. Because I am done. But I was like, do people have questions or comments about this? Because sometimes there's, in the midst of hearing one another, and in the midst of me even being here, there's a reason why I'm on the floor today. Because we are equal here, right? And we can hear from each other. And I had the privilege of prepping this, but is there something that someone heard or something that someone might want to say or a question that someone might have even now? I know we don't necessarily do that, but I just thought, yeah. Mm-hmm. Parents, yeah. Ooh. Especially with a 4-year-old. Or a 13-year-old. You're judging. You're leading. You're not judging who they are. They've come from you. They have actually your stamp, your image on them. And now it's a matter of loving them in that way. And you're going to have to discipline at some point. But I don't know if I'm answering your question. But I don't think you're judging actions. But you're not judging who they are as people. Sometimes it can happen. Sometimes as a parent, I want to just label my daughter. Like, you are just a wrecker. She wrecks things. I'm like, no, that's a total judgment. I'm like, she's not a wrecker. She wrecks things sometimes, yes, but that's... And so we have to figure out how to play in the midst of that. Yeah? Hmm. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we're saying that we have a choice to. We're bound by Jesus's. We're saying we're bound. We're actually bound by His love and His grace and His commitment in our lives, and so we say we want to live like that. So that's what we're actually calling people to. And yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're alluding to maybe the past, like in John, 1 John, when it talks about discerning the spirits or discerning things. But even that, it talks about, like, let's use the history, tradition of the church is actually a group of people making those decisions. So it's not like one guy, carte blanche, making the thing. So that's where wisdom comes in the community. And so then it actually comes back to love. As we're loving one another, trusting one another, we can make these hard decisions. Yeah. Any other questions before you guys take us over time? Yes. That was a judgment. Awesome. Jenny, you want to come on up and lead us? Thanks. I'm just going to pray. Jesus, thank you for your your life and your love and your law in our lives. Help us understand it more. I pray that my words would be seed that something beautiful would grow out of, not necessarily. Just take what I was able to say and what your word was saying in James, and breathe life into it. That we're able to live this life with our neighbors, and that we'd be able to live in your law, under your love, live in your love, under your law, in the midst of that. So teach us what it means to love our neighbor and love you this week. We pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.